Hi everyone, Carrie here. Just wanted to share with you that you can now listen to Jury Duty ad-free by becoming a patron to our Patreon. In addition to these ad-free episodes, you'll get exclusive access to the full Crime Story podcast catalog, including our interviews with groundbreaking crime storytellers like the creators of The Wire, Breaking Bad, and The Sopranos, and all of our reporting by Amanda Knox. Just search for Jury Duty via the Patreon website or the Patreon app. Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Carrie Antholis. This season of Jury Duty explores the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, who was charged with the reckless homicide of Joseph Rosenbaum, the intentional homicide of Anthony Huber, and the attempted intentional homicide of Gage Grosskreutz. As Rittenhouse was the undisputed shooter of all three men, his legal team argued that the shootings were in self-defense. In our last trial coverage episode, we continued our exploration of prosecutor Thomas Binger's direct examination of state witness Richie McGinnis, focusing specifically on the moments of the shooting of Joseph Rosenbaum. On today's episode, we conclude prosecutor Binger's direct examination of McGinnis, focusing on the immediate aftermath of the Rosenbaum shooting. That's all coming up right after the break.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
At the end of our last trial coverage episode, prosecutor Thomas Binger and witness Richie McGinnis were concluding their debate about whether McGinnis had described Joseph Rosenbaum as falling or lunging as Kyle Rittenhouse fired four shots at Rosenbaum, with McGinnis standing virtually directly behind the man who was shot. When that sequence of questions ended, Judge Bruce Schrader called for a break. We resume with prosecutor Binger asking McGinnis about his positioning as the shots were fired.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. McGinnis. We're going to continue where we left off this morning. You were describing the situation where the defendant shot Mr. Rosenbaum. I want to talk about where you were at that location and what was going on through your mind. Earlier, I think you said your eyes were focused on the barrel of the gun. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
When you saw what was going on in front of you between Mr. Rittenhouse and Mr. Rosenbaum, what was going through your mind at that moment?
Well, at the point at which Mr. Rittenhouse turned around and Mr. Rosenbaum was continuing to advance, that's when I realized that they were going to collide or meet. But it was clear based on the speed with which Mr. Rosenbaum was running and obviously what was shouted beforehand that, you know, they weren't coming together to have a friendly meeting. And given that Mr. Rittenhouse was armed, I became extremely worried. Because I was behind Rosenbaum, that I was going to be caught in whatever was about to happen.
Did you feel like you were positioned in the line of fire?
I did, and that's why I altered my trajectory slightly as the shots were being fired.
When those shots were being fired, did anything happen to you?
What exactly do you mean by that?
Did you get hit?
Nope.
Did you feel at that moment like you had gotten hit?
Well, I told the police the night of, because they were asking me, you know, where my eyes were. So as they were, as Rosenbaum was lunging forward, my eyes were on the gun. But as the shots, when the shots were fired, I did actually change my, I looked down at my legs because it's difficult for me to say whether it was a sound or a sensation, but there was a feeling sound that something went past my legs, and I looked down and then I looked back up, and I actually like stepped my feet to make sure that I was fine.
You told the detective that you felt something on your leg, and your first thought was that you had been shot, correct?
I was worried of that, absolutely. I'm not sure whether it was something that actually, actually contacted my pants, or whether it was just the, you know, sensation sound, but it caused me to look down, and I did, you know, stamp my legs to make sure that they felt okay.
Did you feel that the defendant's actions of turning around and pointing the gun and discharging those rounds put you in danger?
I would say that, given where I was, certainly I was in danger. Yes.
Let me back up one second. We've talked a lot about Mr. Rosenbaum's actions towards Mr. Rittenhouse, and I just want to clarify one part of that. At any point, did you see Mr. Rosenbaum touch the defendant's gun?
It's hard for me to say whether he actually made contact with the gun, but what I can say is that they were extremely close, and that if he did, then it didn't alter the trajectory of the weapon. So if he did, it wasn't like, you know, he got a hand on it. It was maybe barely grazed it, but they were very close. And it was since I was behind him, it, you know, his body was partially obstructing the barrel of the gun at that time. So I couldn't say definitively whether or not there was contact made.
We know from all the videos, from all the evidence, Mr. Rittenhouse fires 4 rounds. You testified earlier, Mr. Rosenbaum winds up face down on the ground, correct?
Correct.
What did you do then?
Well, I, after the shots were fired, there were other shots that were going off. And at this point, I'm aware of the fact that, you know, that's probably gunfire. Mr. Rittenhouse, from my perspective, had run away. And Mr. Rosenbaum was lying behind a car. And so I knew that he was, given the shots were fired at such close range, that he had to have been hit. And he was lying lifeless on the ground. And so I saw him behind the car, and I saw it as both a place that I could get safety, but also help him. And so I ran over. I said something along the lines of, are you okay? I'm going to flip you over slowly. And then I flipped him over, and at that point, other people were arriving, and that's, you know, basically all the rest is on video, but we were trying to, I presume that there were, you know, given the weapon that he was using, that there had to be big wounds, and as people arrived, we were looking for those, and then somebody shouted that there was a hospital across the street, at which point I told one individual to grab his other arm, and we carried him across the street.
Let me stop you there for a second. Can we please play Exhibit 19?
The court AV technician then replays a video recorded by Drew Hernandez from the conservative radio program Real America's Voice. The clip, which Binger first presented during Detective Martin Howard's testimony, shows Hernandez's POV as he follows after Richie McGinnis. McGinnis, in turn, is following behind Joseph Rosenbaum as Rosenbaum appears to pursue Kyle Rittenhouse. They are approximately 30 to 40 yards from the camera. We hear a first gunshot, and then as Rittenhouse and Rosenbaum run between the cars, the camera shakes and we hear the 4 gunshots from Rittenhouse's rifle. Then, as 3 more shots ring out, Rittenhouse runs through the path between the cars, back around those cars to his left, and ends up behind McGinnis, who bends over, then squats down, and begins tending to Rosenbaum. McGinnis then rises, takes his shirt off, and then squats down again, apparently using the shirt to try to staunch Rosenbaum's bleeding. Behind him, we see Rittenhouse. After looking at Rosenbaum for a moment, just as McGinnis starts to take off his shirt, Rittenhouse pulls out his phone and appears to make a phone call. After speaking on the phone for about 8 seconds, Rittenhouse starts running away from the scene and vanishes on the right side of the frame, heading back in the direction from which he originally came. Binger requests the video to be paused and asks McGinnis,
"Is it hard for you to see that?"
I certainly don't like to watch it.
I understand. I wanted to show that to you because there's a moment after the shooting where you are taking your shirt off. Why did you do that?
Because I presume that given how close they were, that he had been hit, and that My dad was an ER doctor, and you know, if something's bleeding, you apply pressure. So that was the goal with doing that.
We see in the video that the defendant runs around the cars and comes close to you. And again, like I said earlier, we're going to try and go back to that moment in time. I know, benefit of hindsight. But at that particular moment, as you're standing there next to Mr. Rosenbaum's body, did you know that was the defendant?
I did not.
What did you think was going on with that figure next to you?
Well, the way that I saw it from it was kind of a tunnel vision situation. So I was looking at Mr. Rosenbaum on the ground and attempting to find where the wounds were. And it was like a pair of legs arrived next to me from my peripheral vision. And I just screamed, call 911. And then I saw a hand reach into the pocket. And I assumed that that was what was happening. And actually, when I got up, I did, watching the video after the fact, I was facing Mr. Rittenhouse, but given that I was in the process of removing my shirt, I was actually looking at the ground, and I told the police, and I didn't even, I actually remember the moment the next morning that I realized that that was Mr. Rittenhouse when I saw the video.
If you had known in that moment that that was Mr. Rittenhouse, would you have felt in danger?
I think I felt in danger anyways, but I certainly, I think, would have maybe changed my tone of voice. I can't really imagine what I would have done, but I mean, I was afraid in that moment anyways, so it's hard for me to say.
The individual who you sensed next to you, we now know the defendant, you said he pulled out his phone.
I just saw his hand go into his pocket, and that, like, from my perspective, that's all that I saw. And I assumed that, you know, that was, you know, I had said call 911, hand went into the pocket. I assumed that that was what was happening.
Did you hear the defendant say anything at any point after he shot Mr. Rosenbaum?
I did not, no.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Binger then presents a clip from Richie McGinnis' own camera that he also presented earlier during Detective Martin Howard's testimony. Judging from the angle, the camera appears to be hanging from McGinnis' body and shakes and jostles, offering us occasional glimpses of Rosenbaum as he lays face down on the parking lot asphalt until we hear McGinnis turn him over. After the body is turned over, we hear a male voice, presumably McGinnis's, say, "Get a light on it." A female voice says, "Put pressure on it, put pressure on it, put fucking pressure on it." A male voice shouts, "Where? Where's the hole?" The female voice yells, "It's right here, on his head. Put pressure, put pressure, put pressure." A voice says to Rosenbaum, "Keep your eyes open." The female voice says, "You shot him." And McGinnis says, "I didn't." We hear a male voice say, "Just talk to me, bro." Because McGinnis is tending to Rosenbaum and not operating the camera, we do not see very much, and in fact, for much of the video, the screen is black. We hear someone say, "Stay with me." We hear someone say, "Get him up, get him up, get his arms." And then what sounds like the group carrying Rosenbaum to the SUV.
"You okay? Just don't move, man. Don't move. All right, can I flip you over real quick? Fuck. I'm gonna flip you over real quick, bro. Here, can flip over real quick. Just gotta get pressure on this dude. Where's it at?
Where is it?
Turn around. Where's it at, dude? Get a light on it. Get a light. Give me a fucking light.
Put pressure on it. Put fucking
where?
Pressure on it.
Where? Where, dude? Where? Where's the hole?
Where
get the
He's
fucking
right
mask
here
off.
In his head. Come on. Put pressure.
Come on,
pressure. Hey, keep your eyes open.
What's the pressure on this shit?
Stay with me, brother.
Keep him alive.
I got him, brother.
Just talk to me, bro. What's your name, bro?
Stay with me.
Hey, what's your name, bro? What's your name, bro?
It's all thinking. It's all thinking. The hospital right here.
Yeah, yeah. Get him up. We got him. We've got a car. Keep pressure on him.
I got him. Get him. I got him.
Keep pressure on him.
Get his arms. Put that down.
Binger next asks McGinnis about his experiences during the clip that was just played.
I think you testified a little bit ago, and I want to pick up where you left off, that you attempted to treat Mr. Rosenbaum, and then there's a process by which he is carried over to the hospital. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Can you tell us about your involvement in that process?
My hand was on his head, and I was under his right shoulder. There was another individual under his left shoulder, and then there were maybe one or two people carrying his legs, and we ran across the street, and there was somebody who told us that he worked at the hospital and that we should put him in the car to get him there quicker, at which point he opened the tailgate. We loaded him into the back of the car, and there were people actually, there's a large crowd around the back of the car, couldn't close the tailgate. And so we just said, forget the tailgate. And we drove down a small ramp. And at that point, I was alone in the back with Mr. Rosenbaum. And I was just telling him that we're going to have a beer together afterwards and it was all going to be okay. And that once we arrived, the gate had to go up. And we went through the gate, and that was like right next to the ER. And I helped some medical personnel came out with a gurney, and then I helped them load him onto the gurney, and then they took him into the hospital.
We've seen the video that you recorded at Mr. Rosenbaum's body. There's another video that we were watching before that of someone else approaching the scene. It appears to me in the videos that, at least at the beginning, Mr. Rosenbaum has his eyes open. Was he ever responsive to you?
I believe that when I was talking to him in the vehicle, I like to think that he could hear me. It seemed that his eye was looking at me. But it was kind of rolling back, and then when I started talking, it rolled back kind of towards me, and I was looking at him. So I'm not sure if he heard me, but I think perhaps he did.
Did he say anything?
No. He was having difficulty even breathing.
Just so we're clear, from the moment you came upon his body after the shooting until the end, did you ever hear Mr. Rosenbaum say anything at all?
No.
Prosecutor Binger concludes his direct examination with one last question for Mr. McGinnis.
Can you tell us in your own words how you were feeling at that moment?
It was just surreal. It was, I felt scared about what was going to happen, what I would have to do after that, because I knew, you know, that I had what I had seen. I became more worried once I realized that my phone wasn't recording.
Why do you say that?
Because that made me realize that it was my eyes that saw it, and that rather than just being able to show, I'd have to tell.
like you're doing today.
Yes.
I have nothing further.
And with that, we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Join us on our next episode as we begin our look at defense attorney Mark Richards' cross-examination of Richie McGinnis.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created, hosted, and produced by yours truly, Carrie Antholis. It was co-produced by Chris Tarracone and Aaron Karenik, and it was edited by Chris Tarracone. Our consulting producer is Brittany Bookbinder. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio, and trial audio is courtesy of Law and Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse.